listen to Janet Jackson again. That was her number one hit, and we're playing that on the anniversary of that number one hit. We're switching gears here. A little tough to switch gears, but I'll switch in a certain way that might make it more sense. We're talking of sports, football, and more. We're here with Sarita Hubbard, publisher of the NFLChick.com and GridironGals.com. I know where she was the other day watching that game. Dean Bartoli-Smith is with us, author of Never Easy, Never Pretty, A Fan of City in a Championship Season. We have him on the show to talk about the book. We haven't done that yet. We will. Writes about sports for the Baltimore Brew, among other places. Good to see you again, man.
Hi, Mark.
And Ali Danwa joins us by phone, senior editor of Bounce Magazine, of course, sports commentator here on WEA in the morning during the week. And good to have you with us, Ali.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me.
410-319-8888 is the number. Join us here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on our Facebook pages and also tweet us at Mark Steiner. So let me ask a question here first. I'm going to be asking every time we talk about football. This is how I think we should need to lead off the show and how I'm going to lead off the show. Which is, what does it take, at the very least, for our sports commentators and writers to stop using the R word when we talk about the Washington team? We've banned it from this show. We don't have, we're not allowed to use the N word on this show. We can't use it on this program, on this station. Obviously, we know why. But that is tantamount to the same thing. You wouldn't have a team by that name. You wouldn't have a team called the Kansas City Kikes. You wouldn't have a team called the Louisville Chinks. You wouldn't have a team called by any of these names. You know, the Wisconsin Wops. None of that would happen. But we allow that to happen, and people use it on the air all the time in this station and other places. What does it take at least to begin the process of refusing to say the name?
I think it's an individual standpoint on whether or not the person feels strongly about that word. I'm starting to try to remove it from my vocabulary as well because it is a racial slur. And I think that because it's not a popular fight, you know, I'm using air quotes here, that people dismiss it. And it's unfair. It's really unfair. And I think that from an individual standpoint, people have to start saying, okay, I've had enough of this. And this is now no longer in my vocabulary. And I think the bigger fight, obviously, is if the NFL steps in and says, we're not allowing this word anymore. Let's change the name of the team. And I think that that's the long-term goal. But the short-term goal is the individual fight of each person, personality, broadcast, or whatever, making the decision that they no longer want to use that word.
Ali?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, it's so entrenched in the fabric of popular culture, and people are really uneducated about the negative connotations that the word has. And I often tell people who I speak with and debate with about this, you know, go to a Native American reservation in South Dakota and walk around and use that word,
right,
and see if you'll use it again. I think there needs to be, you know, some education on behalf of the public. People really need to understand the manner in which that word historically was used. And I think Roger Goodell and even the other owners of NFL franchises need to take a stand and tell the petulant boy marketing wonder that he needs to do something. Because at some point, you know, we're going to have some forceful action to make this a reality.
Dean?
I think there's a lack of acceptance on the part of Daniel Snyder and the fan base over there. And it's ironic that it's in the nation's capital. You'd think that people would accept that. But I really think it starts with Snyder. And I think he's pushing back as much as he can. And he does need to be we need to override him on this.
Because we used all kinds of derogatory words in this country before the 60s when it came to black folks in America down south. People can't say that stuff out in the open anymore. They might say it behind closed doors. It might be in their heads, but you can't say it. And I think that, you know, whether it's that or the Cleveland mascot, which is nothing but Black Sambo in Indian clothes, you know, I mean, all that stuff. And it's like we don't think about that. What I'm doing is pushing all the sportscasters in our region and all the people talking on our radio station WEA to stop using the word.
And that's great, Mark, because I think people are just numb to the fact that, you know, it's an acceptance factor Because it's so long, you know, I have a good buddy who is, you know, conscious on so many different levels, and he's conflicted by this because he says, you know, on the one hand, I understand, but on the other hand, this is the team that I grew up with as a kid. I'm emotionally attached to it, and, you know, I'm conflicted about this debate. So you're right. It's an entrenched part of our lexicon that really needs to kind of be washed away.
I'm always shocked by people, minorities in particular, that have a big issue with this change. Because like you said before, we try not to use the N-word and such. And if there was a team that was used with that type of word, we'd be outraged about it. But then you defend the fact that this is the name of the team. I really don't get the hypocrisy behind that. I mean, I realize as human beings, we will absolutely defend, you know, what we like. So I get that factor of it. But as a minority, that of a person who has a nickname that is very racially generated, I really don't understand the backlash from that. And I think that bothers me a lot as well.
410-319-8888. Join us here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. We're talking sports here with our panel. Three people who join us a great deal to talk sports. We couldn't get to David Zirin today because he's in the middle of finishing a book, but he'll be joining us again soon. 410-319-8888. Let me switch gears here again. What was that about on Sunday? The end of that game. We watched it here this morning online. That was insane. Has that ever happened before? That many touchdowns scored in that little time?
Well, in 1960, there were four touchdowns in the fourth quarter, Detroit Lions versus Baltimore Colts. It's never, I don't think anything's ever happened like that here. Morrell threw a 65-yard pass when they thought he was going to go to the sideline. And, you know, some Baltimore Colt fans will tell you that's one of the greatest games they've ever seen. But I've never seen anything like it.
Ali?
Yeah, I was mesmerized and dumbfounded at the same time, you know, because most of the game was relatively dry up until the last 2 minutes or so, and then we just had this flurry. And I don't think it's ever been seen. I think the six touchdowns that were scored or the five touchdowns that were scored in that final 2 minutes never happened in the history of the NFL. And I was reminded of that great scene in the HBO miniseries Boardwalk Empire, when there's a standoff at the gas station and Joe Flacco was Jip Rossetti, when he basically said, "You got a gun, I got a gun, everybody got a gun."
Yeah, that's awesome.
And he started firing his gun off, man. It was unbelievable. It was spectacular. I loved it.
That episode or the game?
Both.
Sarita?
I'm sick of the Ravens. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm tired of my emotions being put in drastic measures. And for that 2 minutes and 5 seconds of back and forth, first of all, I was out. I got myself out of here. I got myself out of the house because it's a tradition for me to watch the games away from home. So I broke out in the snow to go watch this game. And, you know, like you said, it was dry until the end. So first I'm screaming up and down with my fellow Ravens fans. And then we're like, wait a minute, what just happened? Then we're screaming again. Then we're like, wait a minute, what just happened? Then we're screaming again, but we weren't sure whether to scream because we weren't sure if he got his feet down. I mean, it was the emotional roller coaster that I was on, and that 2 minutes and 5 seconds, I don't think I've ever been on an emotional roller coaster like that ever. And that's including the Super Bowl, which those last few minutes to me were extremely stressful. Sunday definitely topped the cake.
I have to admit that I actually missed it. I had to watch it on the web, because I got so tired of doing it, watching the game, that I got up and said, I went to a cooking frenzy, went to the kitchen making beef stew and crab cakes and everything else, and stopped watching the game. So I had to see it later.
So we go up 15-12, and inside the stadium, like you said, it was boring for most
of
the
there?
Game. Yeah, I was there. And we'd come from the upper deck down low behind the Vikings bench, so we saw the snowballs too. 15-12, sigh of relief. They come back. When Jones ran that ball back, he electrified you looked around. People went crazy. I don't know if it was because the crazies were down low, but that was what re-energized everybody. And I maybe the defense was too cold to tackle anybody. I don't know. But they, you know, Gerhardt ran his heart out and was running over people. They threw a screen pass that went for a touchdown, And I just think, you know, you're out there for 3-4 hours, but it was electrifying. And Jacoby Jones electrified the crowd and sort of gave you the idea that who knows what's going
to
happen.
We have to take a quick break. We're going to come right back and do this. And I'm curious to see what you all think about what Adrian Peterson said about the Ravens fans in that game, what you all thought of 410-319-8888. We're going to go out with the great hit. Marvel. Welcome back. On this day in 1961, the Marvelettes went number one. Please, Mr. Postman. Used to love that song. I still love that song. On the way to this conversation, back to our conversation on sports, I remind you that WEEA is helping the PMJ Foundation. It's the season to give. Collect toys, gift cards, school supplies, hygiene products, electronics, coats and gloves to be distributed to families in need. So stop by the WEEA tent today, December the 11th. We'll be going on there till 6 p.m. tonight. At 4905 Perrien Parkway. Just drive down Perrien Parkway. You can't miss it because the tent's on the side. You see the WEA tent there, blue, red, orange, blue, white tent. We have volunteers and staff will be there giving out coffee, hot chocolate, donuts. And you don't have to get out of the car. Just pass it on, and you've gone to help a family. So join us today as we make holiday season joyous for special children and family in need. Just come by 4905 Perrien Parkway and the parking lot here at the Communications Building, the School of Global Journalism, WEA. Come on by and drop off your gifts. We are here with Sarita Hubbard, a publisher of the NFLChick.com and GridironGals.com, Dean Bartoli-Smith, who wrote the book Never Easy, Never Pretty, A Fan, A City, A Championship Season, writes about sports for the Baltimore Brew and other places, and Ali Danwa. Every morning here on The Blend, he comes in to talk, not every day, but several times a week, to talk sports. And he's also senior editor of Bounce Magazine. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Adrian Peterson just ripped the Ravens fans to shreds.
Yeah. I mean, I'll start, I guess. You know.
Sarita.
I went to a game in 2009. We played the Chicago Bears, and I remember it snowed really bad the day before. So it was tons of snow in the stands. And we pretty much did the same thing. I mean, it was all in fun. I'm sure that there was a couple of malicious people out there that was throwing snowballs at the players, and I don't condone that. But, you know, it was all in fun. If he got hit, I'm sorry. But for you to go to Twitter and whine about it, and then he whined about it the next day, I think that's what bothered me, too.
Whine? So, use the word whine?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and use the word whine. You're a professional athlete, dude. I mean, you get paid to take hard hits. A little snowball is not going to hurt you. I just felt like, you know, for him to call us the worst fan base was a little bit too much. I get that you were a little salty because not only did you get hurt, you lost, and then a snowball probably hit you in the back of the head. I get that. But to say the worst fan base, you're doing a bit too much. And Harbaugh actually defended it and said, hey, I mean, it was snow there. What did you want us to do? So it was all in fun. I just think he took it a little bit too far.
Well, the worst fan near me was a Vikings fan. He had a leather helmet on, and he'd had way too much to drink. And he was trying to go to response from us. You know, every time Rice ran the ball, he would say 2.9 yards, 2.9 yards. He was screaming as loud as he could. And when they started coming down, I was uncomfortable at first. But then I thought, could one please hit this person? Because he's not there rooting for his team. He's trying. And I've seen things at Memorial Stadium.
People starting fights. Right?
I've seen really ugly things there. And I thought, something bad is going to happen to this guy. There was no security around. But the bench, you know, for a while, when it first happened, they were really upset. And then they turned around because I was right behind them. Then some of them started laughing and were like standing there, okay, come on and hit me. There were people that didn't have helmets on, so that's what I was worried about. But you know what? this is a football game. And when they scored their touchdowns, that was when the rain, it really came down. Like, they were coming down 30 or 40 at a time.
When the Vikings did.
Yeah, when the Vikings
Ali?
Did.
Yeah, I just think that Adrian Peterson's statement was more along the lines of the psychological phenomenon of a projection. And basically, when he says that, you know, the Ravens fans were terrible, I think he was talking about the Minnesota Vikings season.
That's true.
There was just some overall frustration that boiled over. And, you know, sometimes you got to find somebody to blame when you just can't have the wherewithal to look within yourself and admit that you are the actual terrible part of the equation. You know, he's a wonderful, fantastic player, and I think he just got overly frustrated. And, you know, in a game of emotional swings like that, I think he just found the most convenient thing that he could vent and, as Sarita so aptly says, whines about.
So let me ask this question, just in terms of being a fan and getting yourself so overly emotional that those things happen and sometimes leading to physical confrontations between people who support one team or the other. I mean, that stuff is also real, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We call those trolls now, by the way, who Dean was describing. He's a troll.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that, I don't know where you sat, but my family sits in 514. I'm sure he would have gotten nicely escorted out.
No, exactly. Exactly. But the people in the, we've gotten down lower, and I don't think they wanted to, you know, they're not going to want to lose their seats. And we didn't say a word to him. He just, and no one wanted to. And if I had seen security, I would have pointed it out, because this wasn't just rooting for you. This was trying to start something.
Right. Ali?
Yeah, I mean, we know that the root word of fan is fanaticism. And that can be a pretty dangerous thing when you have people who are so fixated on a particular thing that they just take it to levels that it shouldn't go to. I mean, you know, of course, we've had incidents where, you know, fans have gotten killed in fights and, you know, the parking lot, there's been shootings and stabbings, not necessarily here in Baltimore, but throughout the country. And if you look at what happens in soccer, there was a recent incident in Brazil where there was a huge brawl
right.
in the stands that gets pretty scary. You know, me personally, I don't take it to that level. I'm a lifelong Knicks fan, and it's very hard to be a Knicks fan, but I couldn't see myself wanting to shoot, stab, or beat somebody up
oh, really?
Over an argument about the Knicks. But then again, you know, I don't go into the arena and inebriate myself and, you know, just get lost in the violent nature of what can happen. It's a pretty scary thing. When it gets to that level, so
I agree. Let's talk quickly before I ask you a question about. I hope we have time to ask a question about Nelson Mandela at the end here. But where we think the playoff picture is going to be? I mean, the Bears beat the Cowboys, which the 49ers up. Seattle's still on top.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure what's going to happen with the Ravens yet. So, what do we think about this playoff picture? And I must admit that I do love Seattle.
They're on point.
I have family in Seattle. I've always loved Seattle. Seattle and Green Bay have always been two of my favorite teams. But anyway,
I'll say with the AFC picture, the AFC is so watered down, and now with Gronkowski being out, you know, New England's going to win the division because the AFC East is bad. But I feel like this somehow is a direct path for the Denver Broncos to make the Super Bowl. And I'm not a big fan of Peyton Manning in cold weather. I think that his record shows that he's not that great. Although, if I'm a team that plays Denver at home, if they're the number one seed, I like my chances because it's going to be cold. So you like your chances, but the problem is I don't know who in the AFC that right now, the way the playoff picture looks, could beat Denver. And especially I can't say the Ravens because we saw what the Vikings did without Adrian Peterson. So I can't say that the Ravens would do it. I think the Ravens can make the playoffs. I think Miami, I believe, is the only team that can beat them
yeah.
in the sixth seed. I don't think they'll win the division. But
no, I don't think so either.
although there's a chance because they're only two games behind with three games
Sorry,
left.
Sorry, division.
But I don't see it.
So, Ali, I mean, is it next week they play the Bengals?
Lions.
They play the Lions on Monday night.
Monday night. Okay. So that's how much I know. So what do you think?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about the NFL is if you're in the tournament, you've got a chance to make it happen. We've seen it year in and year out. You know, we've seen some teams with some phenomenal regular season records going to the playoffs and a team sneak in with the wild card, and then they just get hot. Let's look at Baltimore last year when Joe Flacco put together that incredible run that earned him his monstrous contract. And, you know, I think it's wide open, even though Denver does look like the cream of the AFC right now. I think any of those teams in the playoffs in any given Sunday is the saying. New England, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Kansas City, the Ravens, if something goes right, any one of those teams could come out. I like what Sarita said about, you know, Seattle. Those guys, man, they look really tough despite the loss to San Francisco. They look like a complete team. If you saw them annihilate the New Orleans Saints, who have an otherworldly offense, Seattle really, really looks good. And my dark horse that I wouldn't mind seeing make a little noise is the Carolina Panthers with Ron Rivera as the head coach and Cam Newton as the quarterback. He's the future of the NFL from the quarterbacking position. And it's wide open, man. I wouldn't put any money on anything because, first of all, I don't have any money. And second of all, I'm a sore loser, so.
I think.
And then we'll go to the phones here.
I'm going to make a play for the San Francisco 49ers. I think their physicality on both sides of the ball, you know, there are teams like the Ravens over the course of the season that just keep getting stronger, and they're going to be able to play in cold weather. So I love Russell Wilson. I think it's between the Seahawks and the 49ers on that side. I think besides Denver, it's kind of open season. I'm not convinced that the Bengals are it. I'm liking what we're doing. I'm liking what I'm seeing from Flacco. Dennis Pitta opened up a lot of opportunity on Sunday. And, you know, they've come out in a couple of games ready to blow the team out, the Bears. And then weather conditions are things, you know, he throws the interception. They're driving down the field. I want to see him on the you know, pristine conditions Monday night come out again. I have a good feeling against for the Lion game.
410-319-8888. Your thoughts, Benjamin in Howard County. You're on the air.
It's about the money, honey. Listen, I hate to say it. Listen, I hate to say it like that. You have some good shows on tomorrow, Mark. I got so many things. I started to call you earlier, but I said no, I'm not going to get involved. The Indian, one thing. Let's just say this: Indian Head, Indian Village, Washington D.C. All that comes from what we know about the Washington team. Should be Washington Warriors, but. They haven't got enough sense yet to, you know, pass it on. Don't try to hold it. And even though Maryland was the one who gave the land to Washington to unite the U.S. Capitol, these people have not learned that these things come back and haunt them another day, another way. Indian Village was Fort Washington, where all of the people that are of color down in that area, they don't know the history. They're getting back to the game. I like the Seattle Seahawks, and I like Denver. Even though we might not like the way the game is played, but it's the money. It's the money. It ain't the game. Really, get rid of it. It's the game. It's the money. Anyway, you all have a blessed one. I like the conversation. You always got something positive on there, and I appreciate it. Mark, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Benjamin.
You know what? He brought the team up, and I think that this is a point that we forget to bring up. The original owner of the Redskins, I believe, was one of the owners that did not he was against African American players to play. Mm-hmm. He voted against
right.
it,
and they then were the last team to
and
integrate.
Then I was going to say they were the last team to integrate. Right. So there's so much racial tension with this franchise as a whole that it just keeps passing down as generations go on, and Daniel Snyder is continuing that. And it's sad to me because Snyder, you know, obviously is a Jewish man, and you brought up a valid point about there's a racial slur for Jewish people. So what if there was a team that was named like that? I think it's just really disheartening to see the history of the Washington team with their racial undertones and how it continues to play out in 2013 and why people just don't want it to change.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I think that caller had a really good idea because when we were talking before, I was thinking, you know, they're going to have to rebrand everything. And NFL is all about branding right now. And how are you know, a whole rebranding effort, there is millions at stake or tens of millions of dollars at stake
lots.
For that franchise to change their look and feel and everything else.
But, you know, it may be millions at stake, Ali, but, I mean, I just, again, I didn't know we're going to come back to it. We did come back to it, but I just think there's no question. I mean, there has to be. I mean, we had ministers on here last week, Ali, that that talked who are talking about their congregations all through the D.C. metro area, along with some a native spokesman from the Oneida people in New York. And what I suggested is the congregations boycott the team, stop going to the games, don't buy the tickets.
That's right. You know, and if Snyder was to do an honest cost-benefit analysis, I'd love to see him go on Oprah and Dr. Phil, where they tell people on a daily basis that it's time to reinvent yourself. You got to get rid of the negative energy, you know, invest the money in the rebranding, and, you know, create a new dynamic and a new energy in the area. You know, I know a lot of people who are fans of the Washington football team who are dying for the team change because they think, you know, there will be some positive karma attached to letting it go.
They need
something.
Because
if you've seen, you know, the trajectory of the franchise, especially this year, they're the laughing stock of the league. And a lot of people think that, you know, the rebranding effort and the new marketing campaign would do wonders to re-energize the franchise, you know, after, of course, some personnel changes are made.
So let me ask that question. This is not a football question. I'm just curious what you all think. One of the things that was Nelson Mandela passed away on this last week. He was a huge sports buff. He loved sports. And he had this, you know, he was a boxer. These great pictures are coming out about him as a young man when he was had with his gloves on. But one of the things that struck me, I'm curious what you all think about how he used sports, whether it was the rugby team. They made the movie Invictus about it. His very strange relationship with the guy who was the head of FIFA, the soccer league, who was a pretty racist, right-wing, crazy guy. He also loved, he also was a fan of what happened in the 68 Olympics with Carlos in the fist. He was a fan of Muhammad Ali standing up to the draft. But he had this complex view of how sports really can change the way we view the world.
I agree with that, though. I believe that sports is probably one of the few things where people of all races can get together and unify to some degree. So I think sports and music are two of the world's gems. And I think that Nelson Mandela saw that. He saw the interaction between race and sports, which really there is no race when it comes to sports for the most part. I could sit next to Dean. I'm a black woman. He's a white man. And we could high five for 3 hours. And if they win, we could go and say, hey, let's go to Pickles and get a beer. And it would be nothing. And I think that that's something that he probably saw the power in, that as well as music, because he was also influenced by music.
Yes.
That there's no racial tones to these two things, and that's a great thing that he was able to. Yes, he liked Muhammad Ali and he liked, you know, the fist pump and everything, but to bring everybody together for one event, even if it's just for a couple hours, it can make a world of a difference. And I think that's what Mandela saw in sports.
Yeah, it's we're all purple on Sundays. I mean, you know, we go to that stadium and we're all together. We're all kind of one voice, and I think it's brilliant. I mean, you know, I did some travel for work, and I'd be in a place like England when they're even just playing a friendly World Cup game against Portugal, and our flight got in. There wasn't a car on the road, so you're talking about an entire country in their homes watching, and that scale to me was like I've never seen anything like that in my life.
Ali, what do you think about this world of Mandela? I don't know if you saw Dave Zirin's piece or not.
I did. It was a fantastic piece that Dave wrote. You know, Nelson Mandela understood the power that sport and athletics in general had in terms of changing the world. I think there were two dynamics in terms of his views of sports and athletics. You mentioned that, you know, he was an amateur boxer, and one of my favorite quotes when he talks about, you know, his love of the sport, he says, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, I didn't enjoy the violence of boxing so much as the science of it. And he
right.
was intrigued
right.
by how you moved your body to protect yourself and the strategy, when to attack, when to retreat, how do you pace yourself. You know, he said that it was an egalitarian pursuit, that in the ring, didn't matter how old you were, what you were ranked, how much money you had, all of that was irrelevant. And, you know, he never did any actual real fighting after he entered the political realm, but he kept training, and he found that that rigorous exercise was a great outlet for the tension and the stress. And after a workout, he could feel, you know, physically and mentally lighter. He would lose himself in that,
yep.
and that would reinvigorate him to continue the struggle. So on the individual level, he kind of understood the importance of that. But on the aggregate level, he really understood, and Sarita touched on it earlier, that music and sports are the universal language. I remember when I was in prep school, I brought a buddy of mine who was from Boston, who was from an affluent background, and he came to stay with me, this, you know, poor scholarship kid from Brooklyn, and I took him to the basketball court to play, and he was a little nervous because of the looks and the stares, and we just didn't have, you know, 6'4" white guys show up to play at the park with us all the time. But, you know, after the game, everybody was, you know, giving him high fives and hugging him, and they were asking him, when is he coming back? And that's just a very, very small example of how sports is a unifying force, and it brings people together. You know, getting the World Cup really propelled South Africa, and it allowed people to see the country for the beauty of the kaleidoscope that it is, as opposed to what was previously seen as black and white due to the oppressive apartheid regime. So he really got what it was all about.
Well, I always love having you guys on. We'll do it a little longer next time. I appreciate all the thinking you bring to this program when you come in. Ali, what mornings are you on with Carla and Robert?
I am on Monday mornings at 7:30 a.m. on the Morning Blend, the Baltimore Brew. So that's my weekly appearance there.
And you can hear him then. And he also is a senior editor of the Bounce magazine. Dean Bartoli-Smith will be having him back soon to talk about Never Easy, Never Pretty, A Fan of City, A Championship Season. Great to see you again, Dean.
Thank you very much.
And Sarita Hubbard is with us once again. Thank you so much, Sarita.
Thank you.
NFLChick.com and GridironGals.com.
Yes.
Good to have you all with us.
Thanks.
Who's going to win on Monday?
Right.
Ravens.
I'm sorry. I can't. I got to go with the Lions.
Ali?
I think, you know, Baltimore's 1-5 on the road.
Yes.
And I think hitting the playoff stretch, I think they're going to turn it around and shift the gear. And they're going to surprise and shock the world and come out of Detroit with a victory this week.
I hope you're right.
I have nothing to say. I'll just be sitting in my living room with my beer in my hand. We'll see what happens. Good to have you all here. We're going to take
a
brief break. We're going to go out with Big Mama Thornton, Hound Dog. She passed away on this day. She's the woman who first wrote and did Hound Dog, not Elvis Presley. Big Mama Thornton, take it away. We'll be back with the City Paper. Don't go away.